I'm Vern Stefanik. Welcome to another edition of APG's Energy Insights podcast, which deals with all sorts of things that are very important to the world of geosciences. And today is going to be something that is actually very, very timely. We're talking today, my guest today is Dr. Susan Nash, who's the Director of Innovation and Emerging Science and Technology here at AAPG, and the topic is machine learning. Now, hi, Susan, by the way.
Well, thank you. Hi. Hi, Vern. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And Susan, because you, because of your role with AAPG, you are constantly traveling. You're constantly working with emerging technologies all over the world. Actually, this is great for me because I don't get a chance to see you very much.
Oh, that's good. Same here.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
And machine learning, though, is something that in the past 6 months has become, in my life, enormously obvious. Mm-hmm. Geologists everywhere and all the meetings that I went to across the country wanted to talk about machine learning. And so we're going to do several editions of the Energy Insights podcast dealing with machine learning. But we wanted to go to you to get this all started so that you could talk a little bit about what it is, why it matters. Even though it's only 6 months old to me, I know it's been going on for a couple of years. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, artificial intelligence has been around for a long time. And even here at AAPG, we've been concerned with it for at least 4 years, where we've had workshops and information sessions. But I think what's interesting about machine learning is that either people feel fear or they feel excited. And I've noticed that people feel fear because they think they'll be replaced. And I don't know if you have looked at people's profiles in LinkedIn, but I've noticed that a lot of people who previously would only say that I'm an engineer or I'm a geologist or I'm a geoscientist, now they say data scientist and engineer. And one can ask why. And the reason is because those analytics are being used in every stage of oil and gas exploration and production.
Right. And just to back up one more step, so machine learning is dealing with taking data. Mm-hmm. And so computers are able to take data and recognize patterns.
I'll start with the basics.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll start with the basics. Okay. Now, a lot of people have heard of big data. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the machine learning works with big data. Now, what is big data? Big data are these enormous data sets that are coming in from all kinds of information sources. They could be coming in from smart refrigerators, smartphones. They're coming in from people's choices and in social media and online shopping, just all kinds of information, and they're being housed. And there are two different kinds of data sets. There's structured. And structured is like nicely organized. It's easy to process in different algorithms and analyze and see any patterns or categories. And then the other is unstructured, which is kind of like historical data. And historical data might be well logs on paper, or they could be PDFs that do not easily scan, that you can't put into a program.
Okay.
And so that's the first element. And then the second, if we say artificial intelligence, usually we're talking about machine learning, and we're also talking about deep learning. So machine learning is essentially a number of different kinds of, I'll just go kind of simply, but like algorithms or equations that, mm-hmm. that are used to process all this information. They're usually like statistical things. And geophysicists have used this for years and years and years. And the big criticism was that it took days to process all that information, and also that it wasn't necessarily tied to reality. Because what it does is it processes it and processes it with iterative things to try to find patterns. And the patterns need to be meaningful. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're just simply patterns, you can have supervised learning, which has, like, if it's face recognition, it'll have a face of a person, not a cat, for example.
Okay.
So your data, when you like process it and process it, look, so kind of like it's going toward that thing, that category thing that you want it to. or if it's unsupervised, you're just looking for whatever the data will tell you. So whatever the patterns are.
Okay.
So those are different kinds. And then that's machine learning. So if you think about how you have like face recognition, et cetera, that's good. And machine learning is often used, for example, like a well log could be like a face. You know, you can there are a lot of the different types of activities and little data sets and things that are
identifying characteristics.
Teaching people how to build algorithms. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay, and so the machine can look at it. So that, for the industry, that is very helpful because I'm thinking that a lot of calculations and a lot of recognition can be done perhaps a lot faster because of this.
Yes, exactly. And so you might be looking at it from a historical point of view, but you could be looking at it from a live perspective too. So some of the things, like if somebody's drilling and they want to stay in the zone, they don't want to porpoise or whatever, they can build in some of those recognition things. But let's think about, you know, face recognition. Anything that would be recognizable through a visual image is perfect for AI and machine learning. So deep learning many times has to do with predicting. So predicting flow, for example, or predicting your behavior.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. And so that helps me and perhaps others understand why so many of our members and other geoscientists across the world are really becoming intrigued and interested by this. Has machine learning become something that's real right now across the industry,
yes,
or is it still conceptual?
Oh, no, it's been used for a long time. In fact, Devon is one example. They've been using sensors downhole, and they use that in production. Well, these sensors sending in information, and they can do things like predict the or register the flow rates and predict flow rates or predict failure, equipment failure, pump failure, et cetera, based on patterns.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into a reminder that as we continue with this podcast series and deal with the emerging technology, we have episodes planned where we're going to talk to some people very specifically about some of the success stories that they've had. And I would imagine that you are aware of many throughout the industry.
Oh, yes.
Specifics that have happened that people can point to and say, yes, because we had machine learning, we were better and we did something right.
Absolutely. And I think that where it's mostly, we've seen the biggest improvements have been in things like pipeline safety or in transportation, things like that, and in production, in gas processing and gas gathering. And also we've seen it really, really dramatically in imaging and being able to create 3D images where we integrate seismic and we integrate well log information, we integrate all these different kind of heavy things, like even geochemistry. And so we've been able to image like subsalt and also image things where we're able to see the parallels between, say, one side of the Atlantic, and that's in deep water, and then the Africa side of the Atlantic, and actual fields have been discovered because they've been able to image and see those patterns.
And that upstream application of machine learning is what I think is really intriguing, maybe for most of our members right now, because that's where we deal. So the excitement and the potential is clearly there. But you spoke in the opening that there's also two kinds of people, and one of those kind of people fear any kind of change that's coming. So I want to hear your comments on all of this. My setup is that as I traveled around the country in the past half year, and our members mainly, but geoscientists would talk to me about machine learning, there was, for every one person that talked about great potential, there was maybe somebody else who talked about, we don't know what this is going to do for our profession and our career.
Right. And there are two things that I would look at. A, the people who are afraid or nervous say, well, okay, we know that jobs are being eliminated for the traditional geologist or engineer or geophysicist. Why? Because people need to do more with less, and the well planning, the drilling, et cetera, geosteering can be automated. So that, of course, they're going to be resentful. However, the same companies that are laying off traditional geologists are hiring like maybe 20 to 50 hybrid data scientist engineers. And I'm not saying that every person needs to go in and be able to set up their own Hadoop network for big data, or be able to program extensively in Python. But they need to know what it is. And so then they work in a team, and they can at least, and then they need to know where to look. For example, Python is a coding language, programming language that people use. Well, it's not like you have to code everything from scratch. You can go to a repository, and it's open source, so it's like there are a lot of free cookbooks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, let me ask you, geographically speaking, are there parts of our society or parts of the world, I don't know, where machine learning is more prominent than others right now? I mean, the application is right there.
Okay. Yeah, we've got some hot spots. One is Houston. I can just off the top of my head, I can think of say 10 startups that are doing really cool things with creating workbenches and things. And a lot of people are doing things with voice activation too. So they're using it not just for analysis, but for actual productivity, improving productivity. So I see a lot of people in Houston, and then they usually have, say, some team members in India doing a lot of the coding. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then another hotspot is Austin, and Denver has quite a few.
Okay. And actually, I'm looking at this in three different ways. What about the veteran petroleum geologist who's been around for a long, long time and has used to doing things a certain way? What about the mid-career petroleum geologist who has been introduced, who's lived with technology maybe all of their lives? Mm-hmm. And then you have the students and the new hires that are just coming in. Are there different approaches that they should be taking about this?
Oh, yeah. I think that teams are the best. And I really like the whole idea of like yin-yang. Okay, so the field experience is just absolutely indispensable. And knowledge of, you know, what the actual rock looks like and what it does. And also we're digitizing a lot of core repositories, things like that. So a person who's been doing a lot of work with cores, with the field, with structure, with poor architecture, all that, can work with a person who can do the programming. Mm-hmm. And then the person in the middle could be, I mean, I just think all three, because, you know, like you have a bridge. And knowing a little bit about engineering as well as geology always helps.
Well, so let me ask you, so the era of the loner working alone, that we may be in trouble for that person. Is that a true statement, or maybe I'm overstating that?
I don't think that person, the loner, ever existed. Because I know that, like, even the small shops, they would go to the log libraries and get information, they'd get the books and things. Now, you can definitely work from your cabin in Colorado, but you need to have a good Wi-Fi. You have good Wi-Fi and work with the cloud, you know, like, so you'd be able to work with the cloud. And that's another thing, too, I will say, that the things that made things possible in the last 3 or 4 years, cloud computing, and also the high processing chips. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I would say be able to team and use WebEx or GoToMeeting or whatever and team that way.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the advances in computer technology is what's made all of this possible, right?
Yes. And
especially cloud.
Yeah.
But
there's a little cautionary tale, too. And I know you were talking about people having fear or skeptics. I think that one of the big problems with any of the models is that it privileges what you already know or what's already there and the patterns that have already happened, and it doesn't like if you're doing a heat map or like in risk assessment and you aren't incorporating something that, like the red is like high impact, high probability. But then there's always the low probability and high impact. And it's almost like, okay, there's never been a tornado and so, I'm not going to plan for it. So you have to be willing to introduce things that have never happened or are potentially weird in there. Otherwise, it's just replicating what we already know.
Right.
It's not letting you grow.
Right.
And it will never find anything unless it's just a complete analog.
There's something very special and unique that makes a petroleum geologist very valuable, mm-hmm. is that experience that they can come and they can look at patterns and see maybe the not what everybody else has seen, but something special and unique. And I just wonder how machine learning is going to fit in. Are they going to take over that skill for us?
I think that that's where there's going to be, you know, it's very challenging because, again, how do you transcend what's already in your paradigm and what you're using as a paradigm? And how do you break out? And so I think that machine learning has that potential, but it almost has to do it in ways that an expert needs to, like, collide it with other data sets or make something, imitate something else just for creative thought, mm-hmm. and kind of using a lot of mind mapping, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then also maybe sharing or doing things that you would do, like imaging for medicine, do it. At the same time, one of the big critiques of geophysics and the using analytics, it's like, okay, that looks really pretty, but this could never happen in nature. But it makes a pretty pattern. So that's where you get the experience of the person who's been out there in the field. And I would say that what it does is it makes it more important for a geologist to do more field work.
Oh.
Yes, because you can then start taking information. You can do field, you can do photographs with drones and map the outcrops. But then you have more reality to compare the subsurface with. And then especially if you can connect it with core and then say, okay, this is similar to this and this and this. So you have a broader sense. I mean, I don't know if you've seen pictures of fields as they're developed or maps.
Okay.
When they first start out and there's like two or three wells, the whole thing's like, oh, this big, simple anticline or whatever. And then the more information you get, the more complex it is.
Yeah.
And so we have the computing power to deal with or accommodate complexity, but now we need to have the appropriate knowledge to propose that type of complexity.
So you're saying, so as good as machine learning has become, the individualist factor is still going to be necessary?
I believe so, yeah.
You were talking just a bit before we went on camera about universality.
Oh, you're universalizing one's experience?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's another area where people are fearful and geologists are fearful, and it's a phenomenon, I mean, that happens in the industry. If you have a lot of experience, in the Utica, for example, or the Marcellus, you're in the eastern part of the U.S., are you likely to get hired in the Permian or in the Bakken? And the answer is generally no, because they're not clear analogs. So one of the things that machine learning can do and the skill sets is it can give a person additional skills and analytical skills. So it doesn't matter where they worked, it can apply everywhere. And I mean, I'm not sure if it would go as far as to say carbonates and sandstone, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just think that it gives people tools to be useful everywhere.
Well, that's very encouraging because that addresses specifically what some people have as a fear, is that they're going to be replaced, that they're not going to have the opportunity. But maybe we have been thinking too small when we have that thought. Maybe we're not seeing, maybe we're trying to define the future in terms of what we have now rather than seeing the potential of what's ahead.
I totally, exactly. And I think, too, as we come into situations where we're like, oh, our success is our enemy because we have oversupply, we'll have to figure out ways to work with well planning, especially in horizontal, where they have, you know, multiple horizon, you know, just multiple wells going all at the same time, developing that play, and then there's a steep decline curve. Just really coordinate and get the most, I mean, minimize the decline curve, and then get the most out of each well, but plan it so that you don't kill the market with oversupply.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Susan, we will continue to talk more about this in weeks to come, and I know you're going to be back with us talking about it. Let me ask you just before you go, though, because of your role with AAPG as Director of Innovation and Emerging Science and Technology, you're already active, and AAPG, because of you, is already active in this area, right? There's some opportunities.
I'm happy to say that we were doing all kinds of things. I mean, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've had workshops that have been included deep learning, and machine learning. But then we're also having things like hackathons where people can hack into Python code to predict flow, et cetera, better predict flow. And we also have workshops. In fact, in January of this year, we have a 2-day geosciences technology workshop on machine learning in the oil industry, just upstream, also incorporating with seismic and also in selling. And we also have financial decision making. We also have, over the last 2 years, we've had something called UPitch, where we help startups and companies at the commercialization phase find investors or partners. So the majority of those are in analytics. And then that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have special sessions at AAPG, at ICE, Your Tech. I mean, it's we're really, really embracing it.
Right. Your Tech will be coming up. And then ACE this year, the annual convention for AAPG, is going to be in San Antonio.
Yes.
In May. And we're going to, so if you want to know something about machine learning, that would not be a bad place to be.
We have a course, and we'll also have lots of sessions.
Well, okay, thank
you. And UPitch.
So we were able to pitch that. But the important thing is machine learning and advances, technological advances, are revolutionizing the industry and creating new potential for our geoscientists.
Absolutely.
That's great. Susan, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. My guest today has been Dr. Susan Nash, Director of Innovation and Emerging Science and Technology for AAPG. We hope you'll check back to the AAPG website, because we're going to be continuing our conversation of things that are important to petroleum geologists all over the world with Energy Insights. But for now, thanks for listening.